For now, I'd like to turn your attention to Luke chapter 19. If you have the Pew Bible there, it's on page 1620. Luke chapter 19. There was a local man who owned a gym, and this was a number of years ago. And he knew wrestlers, he knew boxers, he knew weightlifters. There was one particular wrestler, though, who was the strongest man that he had met, and he offered a standing bet. He said, this man would take a lemon and squeeze it until there's nothing left, and if you hand that lemon to someone, if he could get one more drop of juice out, this owner of the gym would pay him $1,000. People came from all over, locally, nationally, internationally. Nobody was able to do it, but one day, the scrawny little man came in, and you know, in his business suit. He had thick glasses. He had a polyester suit. And in a tiny, squeaky voice, he said, I'd like to try that. And so everybody in the gym died laughing. You want to try this? So anyway, okay, we'll let you try it. So his man squeezed the lemon, handed the lemon to this small man, and amazingly, the man squeezed it, and six more drops of juice came out. Everybody was amazed. The crowd cheered. The man paid $1,000. And he said to the man, what is it that you do for a living? I mean, are you a weightlifter? Are you a wrestler? Are you a karate expert? What is it that you do? And he said, I work for the IRS. So, that's funny because when we associate tax collectors, we associate that with squeezing us, and it's getting close to that time right now. I'd like you to let's look at a story that we typically associate with our children, and that is Luke chapter 19. It's the story of Zacchaeus, and we've all heard the story. We've all heard the song, you know, Zacchaeus was a wee little man, a wee little man was he, and the children know that song. But I think there's a lot in this story that we can benefit from. And I think it's not to our benefit to skip over this particular story. So we're going to talk about a children's story today, and that is the story of Zacchaeus. And in light of the fact that most of the time we associate this with children, we'll go ahead and use a children's illustration to start this. It's found, as we mentioned before, in Luke chapter 19, verses 1 through 10. And Luke is the only one that records this particular incident. Zacchaeus, and let's go ahead and read this here, and we'll read it and comment on it as we go through it. And he entered and was passing through Jericho, and behold, a man by the name of Zacchaeus, and he was a chief publican, and some of your translators may read tax collector there. And he was rich, and he sought to see Jesus, who he was, and could not for the crowd, because he was little of stature. And he ran on before and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was to pass this way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said unto him, Zacchaeus, make haste and come down, for today I must abide at thy house. And he made haste and came down and received him joyfully. And when they saw it, they all murmured, saying, he has gone into lodge with a man, and that is a sinner. And Zacchaeus stood and said unto the Lord, behold, Lord, the half my goods I give to the poor, and if I have wrongfully exacted aught of any man, I restore fourfold. And Jesus said unto him, today is salvation come to this house, for as much as he also is the son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save that which was lost. So Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem, and he's passing through Jericho. This is most likely the week right before his crucifixion, and that has got to be weighing upon his mind here. Apparently, there is a crowd there. In verse 11, we see that people were, he was getting close to Jerusalem, and they thought that he was going to establish the kingdom now. The Romans, the hated Romans, would be overthrown, and so everybody wanted to be there to see that. And so everybody is there, and they're following Jesus, thinking that he was going to establish his kingdom. And this one guy, I mean, a little tiny guy, stands up, and he runs to a sycamore tree. Now, The sycamore trees in Palestine, it's a little bit different tree than what we have over here for a sycamore. They're huge trees, and I saw several different pictures. I thought this picture kind of gave us the best impression of how big these things are when we think about comparing it to people and to houses. It's a very large and common tree in the New Testament in the lowland area like Jericho, and it's also called a fig mulberry tree because it has very large leaves and it has a fig-like fruit. Now, you can eat the fruit, but apparently it's not very good. I mean, it won't hurt you, but you'd have to be pretty hungry to eat it. So again, this would be something that would be very common. Zacchaeus would be aware of this. He would know the route that Jesus was taking. And and these trees are grow in such a way so that it would be easy for a man of small stature to get up and to get on top of this. And as we look at this, he's on the way. He actually takes through this actually takes place in Jericho. And again, we're probably familiar with Jericho with the idea of the parable of the Good Samaritan. He was on his way from Jerusalem to Jericho. And Jericho was one of the oldest cities that we know about. Some sources say that it's as old as 9,000 years. We don't know. It was a wealthy city at the time, and it was known to have a heavy trade in balsam. And that's not balsa wood, it's balsam. It's the idea of that which is, it's used to make spices, it's used to make fragrances, it's used to make the balm. We read about a balm, something that you use in medicine to put on things. But the city was well known for this particular product. And actually, interestingly, in history, Antony gave Cleopatra a date plantation in Jericho. I'm not sure what she would do with that, but in any case, that was, again, a historical fact. As we read on here, Zacchaeus is a publican. And not only a publican, later on, this text says he is a chief publican or chief tax collector. Now, we need to understand something about the way that taxes were collected in Rome. The Romans had to get money from people that were subject to them, and they typically used people who lived in that area to do this. What happened is that they would sell this job, and whoever paid the most money could get it. The Romans would say, you got to collect so much in taxes, and then everything above that is yours. Well, you can imagine what kind of system that set up as far as corruption went. Corruption, overcharging, it was all part of the game. And so, as might expected, we may not think of it much of the IRS. The Jews, being subject to a foreign power, the Romans, who they hated, then having their own people, that is Jews, acting in a capacity where they take money from their own people and in most cases take more than that which is owed, you can imagine how people felt about these publicans or these tax collectors. And not only was Zacchaeus a tax collector, he was a chief tax collector. Now, this is the only time this particular phrase is used in the New Testament. What it probably means is that he had other tax collectors who reported to him. He was more than an administrator, but he would take a cut, most likely, of what they provided to the Romans. And again, it points out that he was rich. He was a very wealthy man. Well, how did he get wealthy, do you think? Well, on the backs of the Jewish people. So the people didn't really think much about the Jews at all. The tax collectors also had a great deal of contact with the Gentiles because not only did they get taxes from the Jews, they got taxes from the Gentiles. And so much of the time, these people were ritually unclean. And so the idea of being a tax collector would be something that would be abominable to these people. Other scriptures that talk about different views on tax collectors. Mark chapter 2 and verse 15. The tax collectors are used in the same sentence as sinners. And as we look at this man, as we look at verse 7 here, The people are complaining about Zacchaeus going into the lodge, or Zacchaeus and Jesus getting together in his house. And he says, here's a man who's a sinner. Didn't even call him a tax collector. He's just a sinner. And Jesus is going to have dinner with this man. So you think tax collector, you could almost substitute the word sinner for that, just a specific type of sinner in the mind of the people. In Matthew chapter 21 and verse 31, the chief priests and the elders are told by Jesus that the publicans or tax collectors and harlots would enter into the kingdom of God before them. That was an insult to them. Publicans and harlots. You can see how those two would be equated in Jewish culture. So again, as we get a picture of who Zacchaeus was and how people looked at him, and again, not only a tax collector, but a chief tax collector, the boss. How did people look at Zacchaeus, do you think? What did they think when Jesus, the Son of God, went in to talk with this man? Well, this doesn't look like he's going to set up a kingdom. What's he doing talking to a guy like Zacchaeus? So again, there was outrage on their part. Something else that we learn about the tax collectors, they were very subject to the appeal of John. In Luke chapter 3, verses 12 and 13, John tells them, don't extract from people more than that appointed to them. Well, that's how they made their living, is getting extra money. But if they're going to follow John and ultimately Jesus, they had to stop that. The idea here is that in the New Testament, tax collectors were sinners. They were not thought highly of. But here's this man, Zacchaeus. We might also point out here that the city of Jericho would be an area where there would be a lot of taxes to be collected. It was an area where people had to go through quite a bit. And so anybody carrying goods from Jerusalem would take that particular road from certain parts of the country. And so they would be subject to the tax. So Jericho was a good place for these tax collectors to set up. So as we go along here, we see this evil man, Zacchaeus, and he's gone in with Jesus. And something that puzzled me for a long time, and it was verse 8. And in verse 8 it says, Zacchaeus stood and said unto the Lord, behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor, and if I have wrongfully extracted aught of any man, I restore fourfold. And I thought to myself, well, why does Jesus need to talk to him if he's already doing that? And no, that's not how it is. Jesus talked to him, and this is what the result is after this. He became wealthy on the back of people. This is the result of his discussion with Jesus. But let's look at Zacchaeus a little bit more. Let's talk about the lessons that we can learn from this particular story. I think the first lesson that we can get here, well, we talked about this already. We talked about that. Sorry, I should have shown these slides. Here's a picture of Jericho. This is actually the excavation of Jericho. And so if you were to go over there today and look at Jericho, you could actually see the ruins where Zacchaeus lived, where Jesus walked. And we talked about that. This is what I want to focus on from today. That money and power are really not the most important things in life. Zacchaeus had both. Zacchaeus was a chief tax collector. He was well thought of by the Romans. He was rich. He had all that this world could offer as far as material things go. But he saw the need that he had for Jesus. There's a study done in 1991 was done, and it's called The Day America Told the Truth. And the question was asked, what would you do for $10 million? And it turned out two-thirds of the Americans polled would agree to at least one, and some of them several, of the following things. And I didn't put that on there. Sorry. We're going to come back to that. Would you abandon your family for $10 million? 25% of Americans surveyed would. Would become a prostitute for a week? 23% said they would. How many would leave their spouses for $10 million? 16%. How many would withhold testimony and let a murderer go free? 10%. Who would kill a stranger? 7%. Who would put their children up for adoption? 3%. And again, 2/3 of all the people surveyed would do at least one of these things for $10 million. And you might say, well, I would never do that. Well, we're not in that position. One of the things that's important for us to realize is that we should never say we would not do something until we're in that position. But the fact that this many people would do this says something about how people view money. Zacchaeus was a man who realized, yeah, you can have it all the money in the world. It's not enough. And really, it doesn't do what it promises to do. It makes great promises, but doesn't fulfill those promises. Zacchaeus also saw that seeing the Lord was important to him, and the need that he had could not be met by wealth or by his importance in the Roman hierarchy. And he did something that wasn't easy. And think about this. If you're the chief tax collector, you are an important government official. How would you like to be seen running down the street in your business suit, climbing a sycamore tree? What does that do to your dignity? It cost Zacchaeus something to have that. And what about this repentance that he had? What does it say here we just read? If I've exacted anything wrongfully of any man, I'm going to restore fourfold, and I'm going to give half of what I have to the poor. Why would he do that? Why would Zacchaeus do that? Because he wanted something better. As we look at the Bible, as we look at Hebrews chapter 11, we see time and time again that those people look for a better country. They could have left God behind, but they wanted a better country. As we face the challenges of life, and every one of us in this room has challenges, how do we address those challenges? Can we, as Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1 says, look to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith? Because that's what we have to do. If we're going to be successful, brethren, we have to look to Jesus to get this done. It's the only way to do it. If we don't do that, we're going to be one of those ones who we might leave our family, or we might put up our kids for adoption or whatever. Because if money is the only thing that we're after, or if money is so important that we're willing to give up those things, then shame on us. Life is, we don't understand what life is. At the end of life, those people who would give up those things for $10 million, at the end of their life, what do you have? Think about what you have. Think about the compromises that people have made through their lives. And at the end of their lives, men who had given up their entire lives for their careers, everything that they've had for their careers or their money or their fame or their position, at the end of life, what do they have? And I don't know what the thought process is for that, and I hope I never find out. But the fact is that they have nothing. Perhaps at some point, many of them are smart enough to realize that. Unfortunately, I'm afraid that many of them don't. The fact is that it's easy for us to forget where we came from. Look at Ephesians chapter 2. And this is a danger that we have. Ephesians chapter 2. And as we consider our lives on a daily basis, notice what Paul says here in Ephesians 2 verses 1 through 3. And he's talked about the great things that God has done, the spiritual blessings in chapter 1. He's talked about how God had raised Jesus from the dead. And now then he uses that, just the same power that God used to raise Jesus from the dead. He says, and you did he make alive when you were dead through your trespasses and sin, wherein you once walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the powers of the air, of the spirit that now works in the sons of disobedience, among whom we also once lived in the lust of our flesh, doing the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, even as the rest. Let's remember, brethren, where we came from. Let's remember what we were before we were Christians and remember what God has taken out of, how much we owe God. And that's a critical thing that we need to consider as we lead our lives. Zacchaeus had it all, but he still wanted out. And he wasn't afraid to do what it took to get out. Cost him his dignity, cost him potentially a lot of money. And he thought it was something that was worthwhile. Why? Because he saw with eyes that don't look by sight, but look by faith. Zacchaeus was disadvantaged. You know, there are disadvantages that each and every one of us have. There are difficulties in our life that makes it difficult to obey. Whatever the situation that we have, it may be health concerns, it may be our job, it may be someone who's just not helping us out here. Each and every one of us has discouragement, things that would keep us away from God. And it's easy to say, you know, I just can't do it anymore. That's where we need to look to Jesus. And that's what Jesus would have us do. Zacchaeus overcame the difficulty, dropped his dignity, was willing to give up his money to have something else, something that he couldn't see with his eyes. And that's what we need to focus on. Again, the lesson from Zacchaeus. He could have said, I would like to see, he could have reasoned to himself that it would be too embarrassing for me to say I would see Jesus. I don't want to admit, I'm a cheap tax collector. I mean, what are the Romans going to think if I say I want to see Jesus? What would they think of me? He did it anyway. What would people think if they saw me running down the street and climbing a tree? Seriously? What would people think of me? He did it anyway. So again, understanding what's important tells us what we can give up to do what is right. Would we go see the Lord as some people would if we couldn't see the Lord on TV? Would we see him anyway? How much trouble were we willing to go through to be with the Lord? One writer, Gary Henry, made the comment. He said, some people would rather relax and go to hell than work and go to heaven. And that's unfortunately, sadly true. To be a Christian is going to be like Zacchaeus. It's going to cost us something. And unless, as Jesus said, we are willing to take up a cross daily and deny self, we cannot be his disciple. What did Zacchaeus get for all this? And I think the answer is, did you notice as we read the text, Jesus used his name. He had met Zacchaeus before, but he says, Zacchaeus, I'm going to be in your house today. He knew who Zacchaeus was. He knew Zacchaeus' character as well. And the fact is, the lesson for us is that he knows us. And he knows our character as well. Let's be the type of person like Zacchaeus and give up what we need to give up to do what's right. And the final thing that I'd like to say about Zacchaeus is that he repented of what he had done. And I think the two hardest things that we have to do as Christians, number one is to love our enemies. The second one is to repent. Because we have to say to whoever we've hurt, I have wronged you. I'm sorry. And then we have to bear fruits worthy of repentance. Can you imagine Zacchaeus facing the people whom he had cheated? Can you imagine how difficult that conversation must have been? He was willing to do it, though. And why? Because Jesus knows my name. Jesus knows who I am. And I want to be like him. There's a lot more here than a children's story. And again, Zacchaeus, many times he's relegated to the children's room. And yeah, I know the story. Climbed up a tree and he talked to Jesus and Jesus went to his house. Let's go on to a real sermon. And I hope you've seen today that there's a lot of lessons that we can learn from Zacchaeus. Lessons that I think, as I say, one finger to you and three fingers to me back here, all of us can learn. It's important that we get the lessons that Zacchaeus would have to teach us. We haven't talked about how to become a Christian, but I think most in this audience know. If there's something in that your life that you need to change that is of a public nature, we'd be happy to pray for you. If perhaps you just need the prayers of the saints, we'd be happy to pray with you, to implore God, to petition God on your behalf. If there's anything we can do to meet your spiritual needs, if you would come forward as we stand and sing.